It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station, broadcasting from here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 44 degrees. On our way to a predicted high of 55, with east winds to 5, becoming completely calm this afternoon. Coming up in the Midday Report, a Christmas Day fire has destroyed a Kodiak family's home. Kodiak and Ketchikan set temperature records over the weekend on different ends of the scale. The interior is reeling from weekend storms. And a tech company is looking at Unalaska to put up a spin launcher. And we'll tell you what that is.
Live from NPR News, I'm Dale Willman. The Omicron variant of the coronavirus continues to account for the majority of new coronavirus infections in the U.S. Health officials say Omicron was responsible for 59% of new cases in the week ending Christmas Day. Because of that growth, New York Governor Kathy Hochul is urging parents to take infections from the Omicron variant seriously and get their children vaccinated.
It is affecting children more, but the ones who are getting severely sick are so far only the unvaccinated children. So that should be the message you need to know right now.
Hochul made her comments this morning. She says New York City schools will be doubling the amount of testing for students to keep them safe. The death toll from this month's tornadoes in Kentucky has risen to 77. The governor says an infant has died of injuries sustained in the storms. Karen Czar with member station WUKY says the Federal Emergency Management Agency is continuing to help thousands of people who lost their homes.
When word got out that Kentuckians needed plastic bins to store the few belongings they could salvage, truck driver Victor Grant of Jefferson Town showed up with 800 of them.
We went and picked up two truckloads of plastic totes for them to get some of their possessions in.
Federal help arrived hours after the Twisters uprooted thousands of lives in Kentucky. FEMA Public Affairs Specialist Latanga Hope says agents have already helped more than 11,000 Kentuckians file claims.
We've got 16 declared counties, and that may continue to increase.
Governor Andy Beshear says as of Monday afternoon, FEMA has paid out $4.7 million to Kentucky residents impacted by the storms. For NPR News, I'm Karen Czar in Mayfield, Kentucky.
The outbreak of tornadoes killed an additional 14 people in Illinois, Missouri, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Home prices continue to go through the roof in many parts of the country. New numbers out today from the Case-Shiller Home Price Index shows prices rose 19% nationally from a year ago, and some areas saw even bigger price jumps. NPR's Chris Arnold reports.
In Phoenix, home prices are up 32% year over year. Tampa's up 28%. Charlotte, North Carolina's up 22%. William Wheaton is a real estate economist at MIT. He says if you adjust for inflation,
there's never been a period like the last couple of years where house prices consistently, year over year, have risen as fast as they have now.
Wheaton says one big factor is very low supply. We just did not build enough homes after the Great Recession. Also, low interest rates and demand from people teleworking and wanting more space. But Wheaton says in most places, prices cannot keep rising like this going forward, and supply will eventually catch up. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
While trading on Wall Street got off to a good start this morning, it was a mixed day at the closing bell. The S&P 500 set a second straight high at the opening bell, but finished the day 4.7 points down, or one-tenth. NASDAQ ended down for the day. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
A Christmas Day fire destroyed one family's Kodiak single-family home over the weekend. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, everyone made it out of the house and no firefighters were injured.
Bayside Fire Chief Lee Finlayson says two engines from Bayside's department and one from Kodiak City Department responded to the fire on Sheratine. Finlayson didn't immediately know what caused the fire, but says it most likely started on the back deck.
That's definitely in the area where it had burned the longest, but it could have been cooking fire. There were a number of things back there. Not positive exactly what because of the extent of damage.
He says only one person was home when the fire started. Neighbors alerted her to the blaze. Firefighters arrived on the scene in minutes. Flames had burned out the inside of the house and enveloped the roof. But Finlayson says the quick response protected nearby structures.
It was rolling quite well when we got there, and we got it knocked down, stopped it from spreading to other structures. We had a little damage on two houses from a radiant heat, but nothing like what it could have been.
The family received assistance from neighbors and the Salvation Army, and a GoFundMe page created Sunday already gathered over $20,000 for the family. Finlayson says no one was hurt, and it's important to remind people to be proactive to mitigate fire risks in their own homes.
Most important for people to remember, especially this time of year, or any time for that matter, to go to bed at night, close your bedroom door. I know it makes people feel better when they can hear somebody, but when it comes to a fire, it stops that smoke and fire from impinging on that room.
He says closing doors between indoor spaces and outdoor cooking areas where grills or deep fryers might be can make a critical difference when a fire breaks out. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
This weekend, Kodiak Island broke the state record for the warmest December temperature. The Kodiak Tide Gauge station on the east side of the island recorded 67 degrees on Sunday. That balmy high comes after one of the coldest Novembers on record for the island.
We have now kind of flipped the pattern over the last week or so.
That's Tim Markle, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Anchorage.
It was a very rare occurrence. This is really due to a very strong, kind of an anomalously warm ridge of high pressure that was just sitting just to the southwest of Kodiak, and very warm temperatures aloft, and that combined with those westerly winds over the mountains right along the spine of the island.
Those downsloping winds compress and warm as they come off the mountains. The entire Alaska Peninsula saw near record highs this weekend. Kodiak's Benny Benson Airport also set its own December record of 65 degrees on Sunday. Markle says the record-breaking events like 60-degree weather in December can't be directly linked to climate change, but it does increase the likelihood of extreme temperature swings.
Things are just becoming much more variable, and we're kind of seeing that a little bit with a very cold, almost record-breaking November, followed by record-breaking warmth, at least across parts of the state for the month of December.
Weather models say colder weather will move in near the end of the week. Record low temperatures were recorded in Ketchikan Christmas weekend, and even colder temperatures are expected in the new year for them. That's according to Ben Lindsted, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau.
0 degrees was the new record set on both days, and the old records were 6 in 1964 on Saturday and 5 all the way back in 1917 on Sunday.
In addition to the cold, snow moved into Ketchikan Sunday night with 2 to 3 inches reported. Lindsted says it was a quick-moving storm. Clear skies were expected Monday night and Tuesday with highs in the 20s and lows in the teens. Still cold, but significantly warmer than last weekend. Lindsted says snow is forecast to return by Wednesday morning with another 2 to 3 inches expected for Ketchikan.
Another quick break Thursday into Friday morning, but then just this is your heads up, New Year's Eve, it looks like there's a bigger storm on the horizon.
Lindsted says meteorologists are still analyzing the data to determine if there will most likely be snow or a mix of rain and snow. He says there will be slightly warmer temperatures up until New Year's Eve, but current predictions indicate below zero temperatures early in the new year for them.
They are advertising much below what we just had. So we'll see how that evolves as the week continues.
Lindsted says current conditions are influenced by La Nina, a weather pattern characterized by unusually cold ocean temperatures in the equatorial Pacific that affects weather globally. He says current predictions indicate January will be colder than normal, with about normal precipitation. The interior is reeling from a weekend of snow, rain, and wind. The National Weather Service meteorologist Alex Young says the event, which began Christmas Eve, has coated the region with snow and ice.
There was anywhere between 8 to 12 inches of snow around town, with some higher amounts in parts of the hills around Fairbanks, and that was through early Sunday morning when the snow changed over to primarily rain, where from Sunday morning through Sunday evening, there had been up to 1 inch of just pure rain, and we've heard reports anywhere between a tenth to 7/10 of an inch of ice accumulation throughout Sunday.
Young says the last time the interior had similar warm, wet weather was in November 2013.
There's been very few events where we've seen anything like this, where we get this much just pure rain in the middle of winter.
Young attributes the heavy precipitation to a strong high-pressure ridge in the North Pacific.
As systems roll across, like the Bering Sea, they're getting pushed up to the north, and where we get a nice feed of moisture into northern Alaska.
Fairbanks has received nearly 52 inches so far this season. That's almost 20 inches above normal. Young says another storm is expected to hit the interior beginning tomorrow.
It looks like, as of right now, another 8 to 12 inches of snow anywhere from Tuesday morning through Wednesday morning.
Heavy accumulation of snow and ice on trees has resulted in numerous power outages. Golden Valley Electric Association spokesperson Meadow Bailey says that as of yesterday, there were 130 outages affecting more than 14,000 customers. Bailey says GVEA has mobilized a lot of resources to make repairs.
We have all of our GVEA crews, and then we also have contractor crews. But with that number of outages, it will take time, and we anticipate that people will have extended outages, talking multiple hours.
Bailey emphasizes that the utility is dealing with outages spread across a sprawling service area from Delta Junction to Fairbanks and Denali Park.
With poor road conditions, obviously that makes our response time slower.
Driving conditions are difficult, including along the Parks Highway, which was closed between Nenana and Healy yesterday by the Alaska State Troopers. Trooper spokesperson Austin McDaniel says public safety concerns prompted the closure.
Multiple vehicles were in distress or caught in ditches there.
McDaniel says that prevented state road crews from clearing the highway. He says travel is not advised in the entire storm-impacted interior region.
We have vehicles in the ditch all over interior Alaska. We have had motor vehicle collisions throughout. Really encourage folks to stay off the roadways, stay home unless travel is absolutely necessary.
The winter storm that dumped snow and freezing rain on the interior over the weekend also apparently caused the roofs of two buildings in Delta Junction to partially collapse on Sunday. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
A portion of the roof over the IGA grocery store in Delta Junction collapsed around noon Sunday. Charlie Velasco was working in the liquor store two doors down from the IGA, but he says he didn't hear the cave in. He told customers about it, however, and let them know how they could get out of the liquor store if necessary.
Yeah, we do have one exit here, and there's one there. And then there's one at the back.
The part of the roof that collapsed appeared to be located on the left side of the supermarket where the deli is located. Store owner Ed Larson was unavailable to talk about it Sunday, but he posted a message on Facebook that evening stating the store will be temporarily closed until he can deal with insurance issues and then get the roof fixed. But Velasco says the cave-in didn't affect the liquor store, nor a restaurant next door, or the Wells Fargo branch office on the other side.
So far, you know, everything's normal here, and the bank is normal, so they should be hopefully up and running.
No one was hurt in the cave-in, nor in another that happened about 8 hours later at a nearby gas station and convenience store. But that's about all that Buffalo Center Service co-owner Eileen Herman could say about it Sunday evening.
I just don't really know anything because it just happened. You know, you can't call insurance, you can't call anybody to do anything.
Herman says she closed the business after a portion of its roof above the service bays collapsed, and she's not sure when she'll reopen it.
At least till we find out something a little more concrete about what we can and can't do.
One thing that everyone in the interior can do now is to consider the amount of snow that's accumulated on the roof of their homes and other structures and consider taking measures to reduce that snow load.
It is definitely time for residents to start paying attention to how much snow they have on their structures, and especially this time of the winter as we start to get more and more snow building up.
National Weather Service meteorologist Ed Plum says some of that additional buildup will come tonight and last through Wednesday.
Around the Fairbanks area, we could see another 8 to 10 inches of snow from Fairbanks and out towards Chena Hot Springs Road.
Plum says the Delta Junction area got a lot more snow earlier this season than did Fairbanks, and he says that may be why the weight of the snow that's fallen in one area around Delta comes to about 31 pounds per square foot.
Over here at Creamer's Field in Fairbanks, it's about 26 pounds per square foot.
Herman, the Delta gas station co-owner, says the snow load on a roof is important information that Alaskans need to pay attention to, especially those who live in small towns that may have to suffer days, maybe weeks, of going without a grocery store.
It's kind of a blow to the whole community with IGA and now us.
In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
A space technology company says they're in the final stages of examining locations for a site to launch satellites, and Unalaska is one of them. Spin Launch uses a giant centrifuge, which uses kinetic energy to hurl satellites into low Earth orbit. It's supposed to be cheaper and greener than conventional launch systems, which rely heavily on fuel. Representatives from the Los Angeles-based startup visited the island last year to present their plans to Unalaska city officials. The proposed site would sit on both public land and on private land owned by the island's Native Village Corporation. Unalashka Corporation and city officials were reluctant to comment, but KUCB requested documents from the city, which described the plans for the proposed launch site. Those plans include a building and down a road on the historic Ununga Trading Path, which today is one of Unalaska's more popular hiking trails. The site would cover about 20 acres and would house a 300-foot-wide facility. Emails between city officials suggest the site would launch around a dozen satellites a day and that the centrifuge would create a sonic boom with every launch. But the company says those blasts would not be heard in the city center. Proponents say the project would help diversify Unalaska's economy and create new jobs and bring in tax revenue. Representatives from the company say they're reviewing a large number of locations and that they won't comment until they reach their decision. In 2019, the Kawalungan tribe in Unalaska initiated its wellness program through funding from the CDC. The Good Health and Wellness in Indian Country grant aims to strengthen cultural connections that improve health and promote wellness in indigenous communities across North America. This year, the tribe started hosting themed culture and craft nights where experts instruct community members in traditional craft. The free classes are part of an effort to take an alternative route to wellness. KUCB's Kenesha McGlashan Price brings us the story.
All right, which needle are you using?
Oh.
So put a knot on there. And I think you're going to have to do this for each one of them because you don't want it to go through all of this. So you're just going to attach.
Laughs and stories are exchanged as busy hands weave wall hangings and baskets out of raffia. This gathering is a part of a weekly craft night hosted by the Kalungan Tribe of Unalaska. Unanga artist Infisha Sweetie Tudikoff is the culture and wellness program coordinator at the tribe and is using Craft Night to address wellness initiatives. In 2019, the Cowlongan Tribe was awarded the Good Health and Wellness in Indian Country Grant under the CDC and have used this funding to initiate their first ever wellness program.
I call Mondays the Culture and Craft Night, and that's the one for 14 and up. And it's a themed night and it's an instructed night. People can come in and participate if they want to do that theme night, but they can also work on whatever they're doing, right? Beginner weaving, beading embroidery,
Beginner weaving, beading, and embroidery are just a few of the themed craft nights that have been hosted so far. These traditional Unanga crafts are taught annually at Camp Kungayuk, the Cowlongan Tribe's youth culture camp that takes place at the island's Humpy Cove every summer. Tudiakoff was a 2021 camp coordinator and says it was her goal to offer these classes year-round to folks of all ages. Under the CDC grant, she says she's finally able to do so.
The reason why we kind of put culture and wellness together is because our traditions and the things that we've done before in the past is a way to wellness.
Tudiakoff says exercising traditional craft is an important part of her Nanga identity and is especially soul-filling when it involves sharing those crafts with others.
So did you thread that just like...
Yeah, same way.
Okay.
Over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, Tudiakoff says gathering with one another was nearly impossible, and she's happy to create this space for folks while the community remains at low risk.
Seeing everybody here and making sure that everybody was included in some capacity was amazing. I think it touched my heart so much.
While creating space for connection and sharing is the focus of these weekly events, the Cowlongan Tribe's Wellness Program is also working to increase awareness about physical health. According to the 2018 Alaska Native Mortality Report, heart disease was in the top three leading causes of death among Alaska Native people.
And so we have the forms here. You can fill them out and, you know, check your blood pressure weekly, twice a week. Do it a couple of times during the night just to see kind of where you're at.
At Craft Night, the tribe provides blood pressure monitors and logs for people who want to check their numbers and learn about what they can do to work towards a healthy reading. They also provide healthy store-bought snacks, but Tudiakoff says she hopes to offer more traditional foods in the future.
My hope by the spring is to know more about what local traditional foods are here and be able to introduce these to people on these nights, where you can find them, how you clean them, how you store them, you know, and how we can dry them for the winter, right? So healthy eating, being together and laughing and sharing and teaching.
Tudiakoff says the wellness department is preparing to teach drum and headdress making, as well as wood carving and burning in the coming year. Reporting from Alulam, Tanungan, I'm Kenesha McGlashan-Price.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Most of the value of Alaska's fish catches goes out of state. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
As Alaska struggles to find new sources of revenue, its leaders might look to reining in the losses from fish and crab that go elsewhere. Data compiled each year by NOAA research economists at the Seattle-based Alaska Fisheries Science Center provide a breakdown of the shares of all ground fish and crab ex-vessel values, meaning dockside, by boat owners' state of residency. The foregone fish bucks show that for all ground fish taken in Alaska in 2020 in federally managed fisheries, meaning from 3 to 200 miles from shore, a 0.78 share of the value went to non-Alaska owned vessels. By species, examples show that 0.75 of all flatfish values were taken by non-Alaska boats, a 0.69 share of Pacific cod, 0.88 for pollock, 0.69 for all rockfish, and a 0.38 share for sablefish or black cod. For the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands, a 0.83 share of the value of all groundfish was taken by non-Alaska boats, including a 0.71 share of cod, 0.91 of pollock, and 0.71 of sablefish values. It's less of a loss in the Gulf of Alaska, where in 2020 a 0.40 value share of all groundfish was taken by outside vessels, including 0.40 of all flatfish, 0.15 of cod, 0.47 of Gulf pollock, and a 0.34 value share of sablefish. The combined Bering Sea and Gulf groundfish catches added up to a dockside value of $981 million. Updated data for 2020 was posted on December 1st. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 28th day of December, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:54. It will set again at 4:28. That will give us 6 hours and 35 minutes of daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 2 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 4 degrees. That was set in 1970 and 2011. And our record high was 48, set in 1951. And currently 39 degrees out at the airport, but 46 degrees here at the station. And they are calling for a high of 55, which would far exceed today's record. Partly sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon, with calm winds becoming south to 5. For tonight, mostly cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear, with a low around 36 and west winds to 25, increasing to 35 tonight, could gust as high as 55. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, high near 41, with west winds to 15, turning to the southwest tomorrow to 10, could gust as high as 30, though. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 3:21 this afternoon. That will be a 1.8-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:20 this evening of 5.9 feet. Your next low tide will be at 2:53 a.m. and be 2.3 feet, followed by a high tide here on the east side at 9:31 a.m. of 8.9 feet tomorrow morning. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 4 p.m. That will be a 2.4-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 9:51 p.m. of 10.4 feet. Your next low tide will be at 3:45 a.m., a 3.6-foot tide, followed by a high tide tomorrow morning in Larsen Bay at 10:04 a.m. That will be a 14.2-foot tide. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. For today, southwest 30, seas to 11 feet. For tonight, west 30 and seas to 11 feet. And for tomorrow, west 25, diminishing to 15, seas to 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning tonight. For today, southwest 30 and seas to 11 feet in the Shelikof. For tonight, west 35 should diminish to 25 after midnight, but could gust to 50 out of bays and passes this evening. Seas to 10 feet should subside to 5 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest winds to 25 knots and seas to 7 feet.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, You can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.